88.3 Southern FM.
We begin this evening's The Space Show not with Vangelis's Motion of Stars, as we usually do, but with 60 Miles Up, composed and played by the Aussie musician who will, in a few days, be the first Aussie musician in space. I kid you not. Take a listen. Miles in real numbers is 100 kilometres. That's the Kármán height, the internationally accepted marker of outer space. The Aussie playing this music will, all going to plan, on October 14, rocket above the Kármán line and qualify as an astronaut. Stay tuned, we will explain all. Welcome to The Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I am Andrew Rennie. On this evening's The Space Show, we unravel the mystery of the Chinese rocket seen over Australia on Monday. And as we've just mentioned, another Aussie is to make a brief hop into space. And Landsat 9 is in orbit. We have all the details about that. But first up, we're going to have Space Show News. In the United States, Blue Origin plans to launch New Shepard 18 on what's going to be Wednesday, October 13, but it's been put back by a day to October 14, and that's on a suborbital flight. Two of the four crew have been announced as Chris Boschhuizen and Glenn DeVries. Now, yesterday, The Age newspaper published an article about the Sydney-born Boschhuizen, saying correctly that he will be the third Australian in space. The Age says that he nagged Blue Origin for years, only to be brushed off and told to join the mailing list. In March, his persistence paid off when he finally got the call. Well, Chris is a former engineer at the Ames Research Center in Mountain View, California. After working to turn a smartphone into a satellite, he left NASA and co-founded Planet Labs. The company has sent, according to The Age, more than 450 mini-satellites into orbit. Now, the space show cannot verify that number. It takes quite a while to go through the satellite lists and count them all up, but notes that the company has around 150 active satellites. The satellites go by the names Dove, Flock, RapidEye, and SkySat. The company is based in San Francisco. Now, Bosch Huizen has a PhD in physics from the University of Sydney, and he's partially colorblind, so he was refused to be allowed, well, he's refused to join the Australian Defence Force as a pilot. Now, Glenn DeVries, on the other hand, is a co-founder of the clinical trial software company Media Data Solutions. And there have been unofficial reports that 90-year-old Canadian actor William Shatner will be aboard. You know, that same Shatner that played a prominent role in the television series Star Trek. And well, liftoff was planned for Wednesday morning, October 13 at 1:30, but it's now been put off by a day. So what about this music that we were playing? Let's hear a bit more of it now. Well, as Dr. Crispy, Chris Boschhuizen is a musical composer who writes his music on a laptop computer. He has a master catalogue of 300 tracks. They are primarily instrumental. Now, Chris says his passion for space was enhanced when he was allowed to stay up late watching Carl Sagan's TV series Cosmos. And that prompted me to do a little fact-checking. Chris is 44 years old, which means he was born around about 1977. And I can't find... Oh, yes, here it is. In June of 1977. That means that when Cosmos was first broadcast in the United States, Chris would have been 3.5 years old. But the Internet Movie Database says Cosmos was released in Australia in 1982 June. Now, if that is true, then Chris would have been 5 years old. If that was the case, then in New Zealand, I'm pretty sure that Cosmos was shown in the middle of 1981. So if it was shown in Australia in 1982 June, then Chris would have been 5 years old at the time. That's if he saw it first up, but I can't find out what time of day Cosmos was shown. If it, in New Zealand, it was shown at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday. Every Sunday for 13 weeks. And I don't know what time it was broadcast here in Australia, and whether it's at night or in the daytime. So I don't know whether Chris is remembering the original run or whether he's remembering one of the reruns. And Cosmos had several of those. Well, in 2014, Chris was the Advanced Global Australian Award winner. And here is his acceptance speech.
Hi, my name is Chris Boschhuizen. When I was a kid, I always wanted to be an astronaut, and I'm still trying. When I was really young, I used to be able to stay up at night really late and watch Carl Sagan's Cosmos. And the fact that, you know, that was something I was allowed to do after hours told me that space was really special. I became attracted to space manufacturing because after my PhD, I spent about 10 years trying to understand the problem of why I didn't have a space station in space, why I just couldn't go there. And after looking at a lot of things like law, policy, government policy, I realized the fundamental problem was just that people just weren't building stuff. Through my work, I want to make space travel as easy as catching a bus. The greatest lesson I've learned is that even in an area like space, if you just take small steps, you can actually get really, really big things done. Three words I live my life by are team, learning, and doing. My name is Chris Boschhuizen, and I'm the CTO and co-founder of Planet Labs.
In 2014, Chris Boschhausen talked with the International Space Station Mission Control in Houston about Planet Lab and their Dove satellites.
So tell us a little bit about the Dove project. What is it, and what exactly is your involvement in it?
So I work at Planet Labs, and Planet Labs is a company that's trying to provide frequent images of the entire Earth. And so our ultimate goal is to launch 100 very large cameras in space in CubeSats and provide high-frequency, updated, high-resolution maps of the Earth. And so on the Cygnus, we actually launched 28 of these cameras to run a number of experiments and to test them out in a fairly low orbit and get used to running large numbers of satellites in space.
That sounds like an ambitious project. Can you tell us a little bit about the satellites, what their capabilities are, what they're meant to do?
Yeah, so each satellite is called a Dove, and we picked that name because we really wanted to represent the amazing use cases we think we could have for our data, just helping life and, humanity on Earth and helping our ecosystem and understanding what we're doing to our planet. So the Dove satellites are about 30 centimeters by 10 by 10 centimeters, so a standard 3U CubeSat. They have almost, 80% of the volume inside is a giant telescope. And so we wanted to fit the biggest telescope we could in a CubeSat. And then we have all of the other things that a satellite needs, like a control system, radios, storage, and reaction wheels for moving the satellite around.
And all of these are meant to be taking photos of the Earth for how long?
So the ones that we're putting in higher orbits, we actually plan to have operational for a couple of years and provide continuous coverage. The Nanorex orbit that we go into from the space station is a little lower, and so the satellites will last somewhere between 5 to 7 months on average. So one of the things we're trying to do at Planet Labs is sort of redo how system engineering is done on spacecraft. So if you think about it, system engineering was more or less sort of codified as a discipline around the time of Apollo. And a lot of the rules that I used to use when I was at NASA and other places haven't been updated in a while. So meanwhile, this entire industry of software was born that has completely different approaches to solving problems. So we've tried to build satellites as if they were software. And so what we have on this next flock are bug fixes and feature updates. And so we have things we've added, and from the lessons we learned from the first flock, we're able to roll out about 200 small changes, which we call bugs. So bug fixes.
That was Chris Boschhausen, who in 2 weeks' time will rocket into space on Blue Origin's New Shepard. It's going to cost him a fair pretty penny too, but he won't tell just exactly how much. Something else will get the news in the next few days, and that is the planned launch of Soyuz MS-19 on October the 5th. That's due at 7:55 Australian Eastern Daylight Time. Yes, we'll be on daylight time then. And it's going to be a Soyuz 2.1A launch vehicle from Baikonur. And you say, okay, what's the big deal? Well, the crew is Anton Skaplerov, Klim Shipenko, and Yulia Perisild. Now, Klim Shipenko should be well known to you, because he's a film director, a filmmaker. And Yulia Perisild, well, if you ever watched Russian films, you no doubt have seen her as well. So what are they doing? They're going up on this Soyuz MS-19 to the International Space Station. And they're going to film some segments. They spent a week on the space station filming segments for a movie called The Challenge. And it's notable that this launch will be one day after the 64th anniversary of the launch of Sputnik 1. Shipenko and Perisild will return to Earth on Soyuz MS-18, which has been attached to the International Space Station for about 191 days. Well, it will have by the time they undock. And this will give Shipenko and Perisild about a week to film those segments for the movie on the space station. And Soyuz MS-18 will be piloted by Oleg Novitsky. who commanded the craft when it was launched on April the 19th. And so SMS-19 will remain attached to the space station and will return to Earth at the end of March next year. On August the 25th, the Russian news agency TASS reported that Dmitry Rogozin, the chief executive officer of Roscosmos, the Russian space agency, had invited Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and Richard Branson to view the launch of Soyuz MS-19 from the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. Well, we have no word on whether any of the trio has accepted or declined the invitation. Meanwhile, the crew began their pre-flight training at Baikonur on September the 19th, along with the backup crew. They have, of course, been training in Moscow for many months. And the spacecraft was fueled a few days ago on September the 21st. Now, some Australian news. During the 1950s and 60s and into the 70s, Australia had a rocket and satellite launch site in Woomera in South Australia. One of its attractions was an overland range to the north and northwest. But the advent of geostationary satellites that hovered over the equator was one of the many reasons Woomera fell into disuse. To effectively reach geostationary orbit, one needs to launch eastward and from as near to the equator as possible. In the 1980s and 90s, there were proposals to build spaceports on Queensland's Cape York Peninsula and on the Indian Ocean's Christmas Island. They would have used Ukrainian and Russian-built rockets, respectively. Well, these proposals came to naught. And so we are here in the year 2020s. And this time, the market has changed. Small satellites are now the rage. They don't need big rockets to loft them into space. Modest rockets will do the job, sometimes launching half a dozen satellites at a time. And these modest rockets don't need large, complex launch sites. Already in Australia, there is an operational pad at Whalers Way on the Eyre Peninsula, suitable for putting satellites into polar orbit by launching southward across the Southern Ocean. Up in the Arnhem Land of the Northern Territory, Equatorial Launch Australia has begun pouring concrete for a launch pad that should be operational next year. Already a team of 27 from NASA has arrived to help prepare for a series of three suborbital launches. And yes, they did have to do quarantine, coming from the United States. These rockets are expected to rise to an altitude of 200 kilometres in mid-next year. Now, these brief missions will carry instruments to conduct astrophysics research. They will provide scientists with the opportunity to study astronomical objects that cannot be observed from NASA's launch sites in the Northern Hemisphere. Now, back in July, a company called Space Oz Proprietary Limited announced a project to establish what they call Space Centre Australia in Weipa, which is on the Cape York Peninsula. It is claimed to be the first large-scale multi-use spaceport. Advanced design work has started. When complete, Space Centre Australia will have four launch staging pads: a launch control centre, a mission control centre, fuel handling facilities, and accommodation. Preliminary construction will begin next year, subject to land development and environmental approvals. Another launch site is being developed at Abbott Point, and that's in the Whitsunday region. Companies such as Gilmore Space are said to be wanting to use that site. Just how far along the Abbott Point proposal has progressed is not clear. Meanwhile, Gilmer has been awarded $1 million to improve its manufacturing capability. Three other companies have received federal government funding as part of the Moon to Mars supply chain, and that's a capability improvement program of the federal government. In total, the grants come to $3 million. In other news, Australian in-space transportation provider Space Machines Company and CSIRO are partnering to test an Australian solar cell technology in space. It will be the first time CSIRO's printable solar cells have been tested in space. The cells will ride to space as part of SMC's Optimus 1, which is going to be launched next year by Gilmour Space Technologies. That's an Australian-built rocket. Making solar cells here in Australia rather than buying them from overseas is a crucial step to providing our sovereign space capability. An advantage of printable solar cells is that they are less massive than rigid solar panels used on most of today's satellites. And also, Microsoft is to build a satellite ground station, or a set of ground stations, in Australia. Here's a news report about it, courtesy of Channel 7.
In a major financial boost for the country, Australia is going to play a key part in Microsoft's launch into the trillion-dollar tech space race as home to new satellite ground stations. Network Finance Editor Gemma Acton joins us now. Gemma, what will these stations be used for?
Well, and right now there are more satellites in space than there have been at any time before, and that number out there in space continues to grow simply because so many industries and businesses are finding ways to utilise images and data that's captured out there. Now, when the images and data are captured out there, they need to be brought back here and processed so they can be used. Obviously, the quicker you bring them back, the quicker they can be processed and utilised. If you're dealing with a long-term phenomenon like climate change, losing a few minutes doesn't really matter when you're bringing the data back. If you're dealing with something like tracking a bushfire, every second counts. So for the satellites that are placed close to Australia, having these ground stations here means that data will be able to come back to Australian ground stations, be processed really quickly, which will save a lot of time instead of sending it to a remote data station somewhere by internet, which can really slow things down.
And Microsoft is becoming quite a player in the space industry.
Yeah, they absolutely are. So it's great for us here in Australia because they've just signed a partnership with the, or a preliminary partnership with the Australian Space Agency to collaborate on more work going forward. Microsoft has also just taken up space at Lot 14, which is a tech hub in Adelaide. So you have a lot of local startups working there, but also teams from Google, Amazon, Nokia, big global players. As an industry, globally, space represents a huge opportunity. There's so much more interest in it. They're estimating it'll get to be worth $1.3 trillion over the next 20 years. Here in Australia, the Australian Space Agency is looking at creating 20,000 new jobs by the end of the decade, and then having space contribute about $12 billion a year to our economy. Until now, we've been quite slow about it. If you look at the G20, so 20 of the biggest developed countries in the world, Australia ranked 18th in terms of how much of our budget we contribute to developing our space programs. But the Australian Space Agency just started in 2018, and since then there has been more focus on it. Getting support from someone like Microsoft to come here and work with us is a huge thing, and it really matters because apart from the obvious industries like defence and communications, industries that are really core to our economy, such as construction, agriculture, mining, can all really benefit from what we can capture now on these satellites in space.
And those are massive numbers you're talking about. Okay, thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Andrew.
On FM, online, and on TuneIn, 24/7. This is 88.3 Southern FM.